President Biden made history when he nominated Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson for the U.S. Supreme Court. She's the first black woman to be selected for the nation's highest court, set to replace retiring Justice Stephen Breyer, who Jackson previously worked under. She thanked her predecessor in her speech accepting the nomination late last week.
Justice Breyer, the members of the Senate will decide if I fill your seat, but please know that I could never fill your shoes.
We're exploring Jackson's judicial record, how the confirmation process could play out. Charlie Jacobs is a professor of public law, judicial process, and American politics at St. Norbert College. Charlie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
What stands out to you the most about Judge Jackson's experience as a lawyer and as a judge?
I think what is most interesting about her background is that she served as a federal public defender for a couple of years in Washington, D.C. That's quite unusual for members of the high court whose path to that position on the highest court in the land is usually set by education in top schools, which Judge Jackson has, but also long careers in public service. And it's usually on the prosecutorial side or in sort of these white shoe law firms, you know, these very prominent law firms. And that's how you make your connections, because you have to make political connections. But when you work with public defenders, you're on the side of the accused. And that provides a completely different lens for a justice about how you're going to decide cases, but also how you're going to engage in discussions with attorneys who are arguing before the court. And most importantly, your colleagues on the bench and how they may interpret or reinterpret these important elements of the Constitution to protect the rights of the criminally accused. So that really stands out to me as something that she's going to bring to the bench that we haven't seen in the past.
One thing I think a lot of the public and politicians wonder about is, where does a new justice fit on the ideological spectrum of the court? That's something that in a confirmation process, the would-be justice will try to say as little about as possible. Can we form any judgments based on Jackson's career and rulings in the past?
I think at this point, it's a little bit difficult, primarily because she has spent less than a year on an appellate court. When you're on an appellate court, and that would be the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, you have an opportunity to write long-form judicial opinions, and you can really see that philosophy coming through. She spent most of her time on the bench at the district court or trial court level in the federal judiciary system. And as a result, it's harder to get a sense. Also, working for Breyer, who tends to be rather moderate, one wonders if that kind of rubbed off on her in any particular way. But I think that the administration very likely did its homework. And someone like Biden, who knows the importance of these appointments, he was on the Judiciary Committee in the Senate for a very long time, probably remember him from the confirmation hearing for Justice Thomas. I can't believe that they don't know that she's matching Biden's own ideological perspectives that obviously lean liberal.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College, looking at the nominee to replace Stephen Breyer on the Supreme Court, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, and the confirmation process ahead. Charlie, these don't tend to be like hug-filled happy fests, these confirmations. What do you expect this time around?
Well, I think we're going to see some of the Senate's performative art coming through in the questioning. That's what happens here. Everybody has a stage. These are covered in the national news, and it's a great launching pad for younger senators to place themselves out in the public eye, and more senior members of the Senate. They're obviously going to want to burnish their bona fides with the public. You know, when she went up for the district court appointment, she was approved by unanimous consent. There was no objection to that appointment. And when she went up for the appointment to the D.C. Circuit Court, you know, she was opposed by 44 members. I don't think she's going to persuade many more to come to her side. But she did get a little support from Republicans. Collins and Graham and Murkowski all voted for her. Graham's already indicated a little bit of hesitation about elevating her to the high court. But I suspect, because it's an election year, because she is will be the first woman who's Black nominated to the court, there's going to be some punches that get pulled. Because even though we're more polarized now and we have high polarization among the parties, I think that they're going to recognize the importance of this nomination, that she is immensely qualified for this seat. And so hopefully it'll tamp down some of the worst excesses that we sometimes see in these confirmation battles.
We see some conservative officials and retired judges who are prominent in the conservative legal community actually endorsing Jackson. The National Fraternal Order of Police, I'm looking at a very supportive press release from them here in Wisconsin. Former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who has sort of a distant marriage to sibling kind of relationship, spoke positively of her. Does that matter? Does that help smooth the ride for her in the Senate?
It does to a certain extent, but you have to remember, as Tip O'Neill famously said, all politics is local. And so, you know, especially for members of the Senate who may be going up for re-election, who are Republicans, they want to make sure that they're reflecting to their supporters a position that would jibe with the ideology. So, I mean, certainly it helps. And maybe for some of those members who would have waded into the thicket, they'll wait it out because they see, like, if the Fraternal Order of the Police are on someone's side like this, that's a pretty strong endorsement. And if you get some individuals who have been leading voices in Republican and conservative politics for years supporting her, I think it gives you cover if you're a member of the U.S. Senate. And so that helps to provide that shield. But I still think we're going to see what we've seen since the 1980s, which is still hotly contested arguments about whether or not she deserves this particular seat.
Looking at the ideological balance of the court, even if the new justice would be on the liberal spectrum of things, there's a pretty solid conservative majority. Does a new justice make a big difference here?
I don't think she will in the near term make a big difference. I think she might persuade a bit on the merits, maybe soften some of the positions that are taken and the way in which doctrine is shaped, but it's going to be lonely. I mean, there's going to be three liberals at the lunch table and that's going to be it. And until we get some other openings, when there's a Democratic president, it's going to be very hard to have an influence on the way doctrine is developed. But, you know, there have been some very powerful dissents written in United States history, and she can contribute to the arguments and the discussion of the law in that way. And I always describe dissents as little hand grenades where the pin hasn't been really pulled yet. And it can be used later when you have the weight of a particular perspective on your side, you pull the pin, and that dissent now becomes something that you can leverage to be a majority opinion. That's the kind of influence she can have. You don't have to wait to have five liberals on the bench to have an effect. You can do it through these means as well.
That's something I've loved to hear, Charlie. I think she's 51 and she keeps being described as young, which I appreciate. But this is also something on a more serious note. It's a lifetime appointment. You might be appointed as a minority, you know, on the minority side of the court. You might find yourself in a majority, who knows, in 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think you think back to when Clarence Thomas was appointed. Well, certainly he had some influence out of the gate. I mean, he had to wait quite a long time to have, you know, the kind of group together where his voice could have a real influence, and quite literally his voice. I mean, for years he sat mute on the bench and hardly contributed at all. And I think in part that was because of the makeup of the bench. And you start to see him come out and have a greater voice now that he can contribute in a more meaningful way. And that may happen to Judge Jackson over time. And again, it just depends on how our politics evolves. Remember, we had a very strong liberal majority on the bench from, you know, the 1930s when FDR took over until really the early 1980s when you started to see the shift with Ronald Reagan's appointment. So, it's not unusual to see the pendulum swing like this, and it will likely swing back at some point in the future.
What do we know about the timeline of the confirmation process?
Well, I think that the goal is to make sure that she's going to be confirmed so that she can install clerks that she's going to need to do the job and to be able to dive into the writs of certiorari and the briefs that are presented to the court to take new cases and to rule on the ones that will be on the docket in the fall. Remember that the first Monday of October is when their term begins, but there's a lot of preparation. So my guess is that the administration and the Democratic majority in the Senate is going to stomp pretty hard on the accelerator here. But I would expect that they're going to try to get it done before the August recess, that Washington typically goes on for the entire month of August. So my suspicion is it's not going to be quick, but it should probably be done by the middle of the summer.
And briefly, Charlie, this is unfilibusterable under changes in Senate rules under then Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. With a 50-50 Senate, are there procedural things that Republicans could do to stop this or slow it down?
Slow it down a little bit, but stop is going to be difficult unless something dramatic happens. I mean, we had a member of the Senate who suffered some medical issues recently. Those kinds of things can be disruptive. But my suspicion is that the Republicans are going to understand that they played hard with some rules in the past, but they don't have control right now. And so they're going to have to kind of sit down and take a back seat as this unfolds.
Charlie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Charlie Jacobs, professor of public law, judicial process, and American politics at St. Norbert College. He was with us today to talk about President Biden's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson and for a look at the ahead at the confirmation process.